You are listening to The Dystopian Republic, and I, Raul Guerrero, am your host. We begin today's story on the sunrise of August 27th, 1997. In his room above Serpicho's, Michel looked ready to conquer in his green polo, white chinos, and red loafers. He said that with the morning now done, the reconstructing could now begin, walking out as his parents and their workers were preparing for lunch service. At an affordable housing complex, Roni woke up with the hair of an old wet mop, and the look on her face was of someone not wholly there. Michelle walked from Denierkri Plaza, away from downtown, into Sechonk Acres and a phone booth, as if he was a girl skipping down a meadow of tulips. Roni lurched to the living room and almost fell when the telephone rang, got back up, and answered Michelle's call. Her moaning hello scribbled all over the heavenly valley his mind worked its butt off to paint, and it made his skin crawl. Michelle asked Roni how she was doing on this sunshiny morning with a tone as tender as a mother's embrace of her child. She wished she could say that she's well, but to say that would be to lie to his face, and she'd never ever do that. Michelle could feel the grief coming out of Roni and told her that she may be glum now, but said that today will begin her walk back to happiness. He said he won't sit on his butt and allow the hell that was let loose on Monday to define Curahaso High or Bromelia. Roni reminded him that 3 kids died and so many more were hurt or put in jail, saying that it revealed the darker side of their school and people. Michelle was aware of that, but asked her if she felt it was time to unveil the good side of Curahaso High and Bromelia. Roni wondered if he was wearing the shoes that brought out his inner preacher, but chose not to ask him and instead tell him that she'll meet him outside the complex. Her sudden hang-up didn't bother Michelle, and if anything, he was glad to get the pushback because it'll make her change in outlook all the sweeter, whistling his walk out of the booth. He and Roni met outside the complex, embraced, held it tight for an intense moment, and walked to a crowded bus stop around the corner. Laura walked into an all-hands-on-deck meeting at the high school as the pessimist in a room of legally blind optimists. Bergen's sister, Roalda, was the principal who thanked everyone for showing up, marking now as the start of a healing more lasting than the scar that was Monday. Michelle's lively greet was met with hey's and hello's, weaker and duller than straws, hued by dark clouds that couldn't stop drizzling. Roni blurted a hand-waving howdy to bring credibility to what he yelled, but could tell that her gloominess wasn't unique. The weak replies convinced Michelle that snapping his peers out of their glum will be quite a task. A packed bus prompted him and Roni to sit with Daniela, who was already upset that she had to share a seat with Toddy. Michelle asked the latter two girls if all was okay on their respective sides of the world, getting twin frowns as lightless as a pit with no visible base. Daniela declined to answer and wanted him to tell her how fine he thought she was not having Danielle by her side with grinding teeth. Toddy's rigid look out the window spelled out her preference to not even bring up the rumble, let alone discuss it in detail. Michelle told Daniela that she had to admit that what Daniel gleefully did was egregious, sighing his pity when she looked down and said all she wanted was for her brother to be with her. Tati didn't want to imagine how similar she looked to Richelieu, thanking the Lord that Laura let her stay in the classroom during that dark recess. Because of the rumble, only 32 students showed up for school, everyone else being dead in jail or too injured or traumatized to return. Most were in too much of a daze to talk small, much less large, while the few who weren't felt that this mass dwelling must end now. Via intercom, Roalda greeted, identified herself, and hoped that her students' mornings so far were as peaceable as they could be. She was well up on how depressed and ashamed they must feel presently, saying she had just the soap to wash away those awful feelings. Roalda asked her students how a day at Amazing Bromelia's Smiley Dumb sounded, because that was where Kira Hustle High will be having its end of summer trip. A suburb north of Delgadopolis, Tarancetin was under the shadows of said city and a year-round fun fair. Smiley Dumb had an appearance typical for a theme park from afar, but up close, one could feel that its personality went beyond its desire to make people smile. One school bus stopped and slid its door open in front of the fun fair's entrance as Hiomada merrily stood with an army of employees that followed her many-hued, exuberant example. Roalda stepped out with the eight or so who shared her enthusiasm right behind her, and surprisingly, Michelle wasn't one of them. Roni thought the smiles and grins looked a tad stilted, but the optimism Michelle showed when they embraced told her to keep an open mind. Tati found it odd that Roalda chose Smiley Dumb to accomplish her mission of bringing some unity and pride back to Kira Hustle High. Although Laura left the meeting less pessimistic, she believed it was going to take a lot more than a day at the fun fair to reunite the school. Daniela viewed the first impression made as a smokescreen that she didn't blame others for being fooled by, intending to soil the fun Smiley Dumb planned before it can ensnare her or her peers in its traps. Michelle stared at Hiomada as if she was a creature straight from Hell's Lagoon, remaining seated until the bus driver told him to step out. Images of students bruised all over and or bleeding everywhere cracked Roalda's carefree walk to Smiley Dumb's founder and owner. Watching the principal and Hiomada shake hands caused Michelle to pull a face that Roni saw, worrying her into asking what was up with him. Roalda thanked Smiley Dumb's owner for letting Kira Hustle High have its trip today, understanding how busy the fun fair must be with all the schools it serves throughout the year. Hiomada said she was lucky to have found the day opening when she did, because her school beat 61 others to it. She added that Smiley Dumb was so booked that she's planning to start offering small hour visits in addition to the daytime, prime time, and late night ones already offered. Hiomada told Roalda not to utter a why or how, because she's got a middle school from Hambleton coming at 3 p.m. and so it'd be responsible to begin the fun right away. Smiley Dumb's operating times were this: daytime 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., prime time 3 p.m. to 9 p.m., and late night 9 p.m. to 3 a.m. But starting on September 22nd, the funfair will also have small hour, which starts at 3 a.m. and ends at 9 a.m. Michelle squinted at the bubbly sign that had said information and wondered how on earth Hiyomada could keep Smiley Dumb open around the clock. But Roni's plea for him to hold her hand interrupted that. Roni noticed the towering lead-dense wooden fence gate and tunnel ahead and to her right, hiding what was behind it from view. Toddy saw this as well and concluded that Smiley Dumb was going to be an experience unlike any other she's ever had or will have. With the help of her workers, Hiyomada walked her guests to the Park of Limitless Hides and described it as the ideal place to melt some ice. She said the students will be split into 8 groups of 4 and go on a scavenger hunt meant to endear the members of each group to one another. Only Roalda and her followers were eager to play, while everyone else scoffed, groaned, were indifferent, or unsure of what to think. Taking no notice of the mixed reception, Hiyomada had Michelle, Roni, Toddy, and Daniela be one group, and the other 7 she created were equally inharmonious. No quartet was Holy Red Wasp, Black Hornet, Yellow Jacket, White Dauber, or Colorless, increasing the likelihood of 1-on-3, 2-on-2, 2-on-1-on-1, and 4-way clashes. Roalda warned her students that physical fighting and attempts to flee the park won't be tolerated, and those who fight or run will be disciplined. She had them raise their hands and swear that they won't try anything and sincerely engage with the hunt at hand. That impressed Hiyomada, reminded her of how much her workers respected her and made her feel blessed that she wasn't the only one with a knack for persuading people. There was something in Smiley Dumb's owner that Roalda could use to help her achieve a goal born out of the ashes of Bromelia's civil war. Hiyomada, too, had things she wanted to accomplish, viewing Kurohaso High's principle as a highly valuable asset. The women planned to discuss each other's plans for the future as the workers supervised the hunt. Roalda's pager went off, and the message she got damaged her gaiety like a windshield broken all over by a basketball's bouncing impact. She inhaled her concern and exhaled a sureness that the threat at her school will be scooped up and put into a bag like dog poop. Hiyomada said the object of the hunt was to find the most cards, all of which will contain commands that must be said and or done. She wished the students the best of luck and for the game to reduce hate to a blank canvas from which to rebuild in love's image. Michelle didn't trust Hiyomada at all and hid that behind a perceived willingness to go with the flow. He was intent on confronting her, but needed to get her and himself alone and make sure his confrontation ends with no one noticing. Michelle's hesitation to act on this intention came from the promise he made to Roni when they cuddled, lying about his mind being teased by rumble flashbacks after she caught the face he pulled. Hiyomada had the groups amass behind the park's entrance gate, and an On Your Marks, Get Set, and Go was the quartet's cue to enter and hunt. She told students that they would be disqualified and asked to leave if they split up during the hunt or games that followed it. That leveled Daniela's suggestion that her group split up, blessing Michelle's want for her, himself, Roni, and Toddy to remain close. One of the tutu groups let out an all right and whatever that sucked it up, choosing to coexist for today only. Since their halves were Red Wasp and White Dauber in quality, the inclination to work as one was there, bringing Roni back to when the Bernardos and Rudels used to be palsy walsy. The three in the 1-3 group told their one that he could follow and not be harmed, but he mustn't utter a word. This wasn't a surprise to Toddy, since she expected the Red Wasps to gang up on the Yellow Jacket, especially if it was three girls against one boy. Roalda disliked seeing this, but still felt it was an improvement compared to Monday's violence. As for one of the 2-1-1 groups, the colorless two scared the Black Hornet and Yellow Jacket ones into clearly understanding that they will coexist. Michelle wished he had the courage and stomach to do something so stark, but he wasn't at that point with Daniela or Toddy and hoped to never get there. They and Roni joined six of the groups in stopping at the site of a 4-way one coming to blows. Black Hornet versus Red Wasp versus Yellow Jacket versus White Dauber. Roalda had a feeling that at least one of the quartets wouldn't work out, knitting her brows at the workers breaking up the fight and taking the four away. Her try to look strong was successful, even if the cries and bellows from the now former group made her sick to her stomach. Hiyomada told the remaining quartets that the four who were taken away will be fine and simply wait in the security station for their legal guardians to pick them up. Not buying that tell, Michelle was sure that the ex-quartet breaking up was part of her plan to convert them and ultimately him and his peers. The fight whitened Daniela into remembering what was showered on her upon her return to her Delgadopolis home. It ignited a fire that made her reconsider her self-identification as a Red Wasp, but it had no idea how to spread beyond where it broke out. The fight and takeaway sobered the other 1-3, 2-2, and 2-1-1 groups tolerant. Hiyomada asked why her quartets were standing there and if they should be on the prowl, barking her order for them to search. Roni could feel Michelle's optimism degrade like glass exposed to burning heat. How set Daniela was in her unwillingness to mingle, and the size of Toddy's courage shrink from a feather to that of a fly. She told her group mates that Hiyomada was right. They should get to searching and give what they find a chance to better their week. Roni admitted to being in no less pain than anyone else, and that she'll never fully understand the anger, shame, or non-fulfillment her peers must be dealing with. The only thing she could explain fully was the despondency weighing her psyche down like weight plates covered in traumatic scribbles. Roni asked her peers if they ever thought of why they're at Smiley Dumb and not dead in jail, hospital, at home, or God knows where else. That reminded Daniela that Danielle was in hiding and will almost certainly remain wherever he was now until the day he dies. Roni asks her peers to raise their hands if they looked at Monday as a day to celebrate and said that was what she fought when no one did. Toddy remembered the shame that overcame her when Richelieu faced her defeat and it sharpened her dull headache. Roni asked her peers if they're preparing for a sequel to the rumble they chickened out of and tittered when she got Nay's head shakes and ashamed winces. Michelle appreciated the courage she was demonstrating despite it not being to his liking in terms of sensitivity, but his want to confront Hiyomada shut him up. Roni wanted those who desired to heal from the rumble to raise their hands, and all of her peers did. Staying quiet through all of this, Laura began believing that perhaps something good could come out of the field trip, but the chance of it being a mirage kept her from holding her breath. Roni said that while their time at Smiley Dumb was unlikely to completely heal, it'll prove to schools the mainland over that Bromelians were still capable of uniting. She implored her peers to throw any bull they hear from naysayers abroad about Bromelia being a broken state into the rubbish heap. Roni said if their nation truly was irreparably damaged, then Gregorio Jr. would still be ruling it, setting her group and the other ones straight. Toddy wasn't ashamed of her Delgado surname and would never want to change it, but her desire to be her own woman was stronger. Daniela was equally guiltless over Rudel being her last name and thought it had death beyond its affiliation with Alexis Jr. and the like. Roni asked her peers if embarking on a scavenger hunt sounded like fun and was grateful to see nothing but yays, head nods, and hopeful grins. The thank you Michelle mouthed to her underscored how badly he wanted her day at Smiley Dumb to be pleasantly memorable. Toddy and Daniela could sense each other's lack of guilt and shame, felt they weren't so different after all, and exchanged bashful smiles. The girls were tranquil enough to join Michelle and Roni rather than feet drag their following of them with their noses held. As the scavenger hunt resumed, he couldn't stop wondering how she abruptly went from being as fragile as a leaf to having the valor of a gladiator. Michelle wanted God not to tell him that Roni too had things to hide, but realized that his closet also contained skeletons. At a Burkeon tree covered in sparrows, Toddy found a card resting on a nest and it told her to say something nice to the first person she sees. She looked at Michelle and said that his taste in clothes would blow away even the most exclusive fashion houses. Daniela gulped down the urge to stick her tongue out in disgust, and Roni felt jealousy sour her stomach. Michelle thanked Toddy for the nice words and caused her face to hue a subtle pink when he held her left shoulder and asked her if that was so hard. She checked out his dapper, dimpled face and his well-groomed being, which he liked, irking Roni into telling them that they and Daniela need to keep moving. Michelle and Toddy apologized in that order and led the way to the glossy jade bench where they found their second card. It told Roni to give the last card holder something of sentimental value or give that person a big hug if she had no such item. Toddy cracked a smile that she didn't know was eerily similar to the one Richelieu gave during one of her visits to Camp Sunshine. Roni stared at the Italian horn necklace Michelle gifted her for her 16th birthday, remembering when he welcomed her to the Serpicio family, as he put it around her neck. She had it in her hand and said that the chance of her parting with it was zero, adding that it was too valuable for her to give it to someone else. Roni's mind gripped its nose as she hugged Toddy but released its hold when a gentle warmth squeezed tears out of her eyes. Daniela felt left out watching this, and Michelle's mind focused on brewing what he'll say to Hiomada when he confronts her. She took his hand, ran with him to a heart fountain 6 meters ahead of the bench, and found a third card resting in the water. Roni swallowed her jealousy as she and Toddy ended their hug, but took that pass down back when she caught Michelle liking Daniela, taking him by the hand, stomping to them in a mortified rage. Laura sighed an oh no that underlined her belief that she was about to see another group be taken away, helping her pessimism squeeze its way to her mind's forefront. But her negativity was thrown to the back when Roni relented at the last second and told Michelle that she was sorry for assuming the worst. Toddy stopped herself from laying a restraining finger, but Daniela was weirded out first, then relieved, and finally joyful. Michelle took the card and read that it wanted him and his group to sit down someplace and tell one secret that has dogged their souls. He thought that was different because the first two were nice and giving, but the third was agog, as he nicely put it. Michelle showed Daniela, Roni, and Toddy the card, and they were equally creeped out by what it asked for. They also didn't like that there was no alternative, choosing to comply when Hiomada saw them stare at it as if it was a lewd image. Daniela, Roni, and Toddy followed Michelle to a small patch of grass field surrounded by 4 trees and dense brush between them. Laura didn't like how uncomfortable the 4 looked after reading the card, and neither did Roalda, tempting both to call out Hiomada. What prevented them from doing that was how unsure they were that what they suspected was even true, silencing them, but with the asterisk that watched Smiley Dumb, its owner, and her employees like hawks. Seeing Michelle, Daniela, Roni, and Toddy haste into the patch, Hiomada was glad that the 4 chose it as their place to exchange secrets. She smiled over them being unaware that where they hid and locations like it were bugged, her way of collecting dirt that she could use should her life, livelihood, or freedom be threatened. Hiomada knew it was possible that what she built may come crashing down one day, but we'll see to it that she doesn't fall alone. That didn't mean she was going to sit back and relax as fate debated whether to let that crash down take place. Also on Hiomada's mind was a recent article she read about a social networking service set to launch soon, being described by its developers as having unprecedented capabilities. Sweet giggles, light-hearted running, and happy reading went with the flow of a wind that swirled around the patch as all was quiet in it. Michelle, Daniela, Roni, and Toddy were in between a hope that someone else will go first and dread that they'll have to be the one to start the revealing. The four agreed that sitting in silence won't make their situation better and to pinky swear on their lives that whatever was said in the patch remains there. The Rock Paper Scissors tournament held had Michelle win it, Daniela be the runner-up, Toddy win the third place game, and Roni finish last. They couldn't hear or see how the other groups were doing or if said quartets have encountered cards as prying as the one they're reluctantly complying to. The tournament decided the order in which the four would reveal: Roni first, Toddy second, Daniela third, and Michelle fourth. Police arrived at Curahaso High within minutes of a call coming in about a suspicious person trespassing and wandering around. But that individual was nowhere to be seen when the school was raided, prompting officers to look at security footage that wound up being of little use to them. The trespasser was completely covered by black clothing and had a ski mask on, but had a body shape and gait that was likely feminine. Roni bit her lip with eyes that touched Michelle with the nervousness it emitted, debating whether to spit out the secret she had in mind. Her trust in the pinky swear wasn't whole, but her want to confide was, confessing that she's not an only child. Toddy thought that secret was innocuous and said she's had much worse stuff divulged to her, and Daniela reacted with a disappointed and that hungered for raunch and debauchery. Michelle wasn't shocked by what Roni admitted to, as he thought that the likelihood of her not having any siblings was high. The pictures all over her apartment made it clear to him that the Bernardos were a large family, but the fact that he's only met and gotten to know her and her parents made him fear that the White Dauber's nest wasn't big anymore. Roni said that her not being an only child wasn't her only secret, as she had another that was far juicier, but will let Toddy, Daniela, and Michelle have their turns first. The trespasser unlocked and entered one of the many non-functional RVs packed in a slab of concrete that was cracked up by tall weeds. A strip down to underwear and unmasking revealed her as Gavrila Bernardo, and after she changed into casual clothing, she looked back and saw her sisters Coneja and Delfina sitting down dressed likewise. Still in his underwear, Roni's father Lawton stared at a portrait while eating a bacon, egg and cheese pancake sandwich. He was joined by her mother Crane, who was dressed and put her arm around his neck, sighing at the picture's sweet surface and bitter underbelly. Cornejas asked if Gavrila planted the devices was met with the nod of a rattlesnake high on its lust to inject venom, getting a similar one out of Delfina. The portrait was made out of a picture Lawton took of Roni blowing her pink teddy bear birthday cakes for candles. That brought A sugary smile to Crane's face as well as his own, letting the happiness that warmed the air of that party comfort them. But zooming out put that good feeling to an end, revealing then teenagers Gavrila, Coneja, and Delfina smiling while carrying Roni. Lawton loved how the former three held the latter with grips that mixed obsessive love with an equally intense sense of duty to protect. He was on his knees for fate to let him see Gavrila, Coneja, and Delfina again, hoping that they were living productively and serving their fellow people wherever they were. Crane didn't share in Lawton's begging, as she had seen the girls not long ago and left that reunion uncomfortable and nauseous. She never told him about this because she knew it would have broken his heart and plunged Roni down a darkness worse than the one she got thrown into by the rumble. Crane was thankful that fate let her reunite with Gavrila, Coneja, and Delfina at a place 279 miles from where she, Lawton, and Roni lived. She wasn't worried about her three eldest daughters finding her, their dad, and baby sister, as they didn't know her street address nor what the latter two looked like now. But Crane had no intention of ever meeting with Gavrila, Coneja, or Delfina again after how they behaved during their overnight reunion. Lawton prayed for fate to bring his three eldest daughters to him so that they, their mom, and Roni can enjoy life again. With a tongue coated in a saliva thickened by mucus, Gavrila couldn't wait for the kids of Kurahaso High to come back so that the devices can madden them. Coneja took glee in knowing that no one was under Tails or that of Delfina, imagining the body count that the three of them have amassed being a mount as tall and large as a three-floor home. Gavrila thanked the freaks who cared for her and the two with her for introducing them to the beasts they never knew were in them. Delfina said that for as invisible as they and Coneja were, it was too bad that the chances of them seeing Roni were slim. Gavrila called her out for sorrowing the euphoria stuffing the RV and assured her that the three of them will not only reunite with their baby sister, but also convert her and their parents. Coneja said the important thing was that no one knows of the Bernardo trio and that the girls comprising it remain in society's shadows. She grabbed Gavrila and Delfina, forced them to embrace her, said that may their pleasure never end, and the Bernardos again be one family under love, forever together with pain and suffering for all. Daniela asked Roni what reason she had for not revealing her other secret now, but only got a silence that struck her as defensive. Michelle didn't like that and suspected that the latter Maeve said too much by accident, not the first time that she's done that either. The last time he and Roni fought splashed on his mind like water in a balloon, sighing his regret over how it ended and what it almost did. Michelle hid this ponder behind a grin he made himself crack as he suggested that he, Daniela, and Toddy reveal their secrets so that she'll be comfortable enough to to let her other one go. Roni yelled that to hell with that suggestion because she couldn't bear holding it in any longer, describing it as one of the banes plaguing her existence. She had Daniela, Toddy, and Michelle swear to God with pinkies that they won't tell anyone what she's about to reveal under penalty of a wrath the likes of which they've never experienced. Her threat scared them into being serious about upholding that promise and allowed her brain to morph that revelation into a passage. Four deep breaths later, Roni asked Michelle if he recalled the day she joined his family in checking out that abandoned steakhouse. When he did, she assumed that he remembered how his father saw it as the place to build his second ristorante, Sir Picho's, at the University of the Capital Shopping Center. After Michelle said yes, Roni asked if he recalled when she was gone for an hour and a half and how he had to find her when she didn't return in 20 minutes as she promised. When he nodded, Toddy asked her what she was getting at, and Daniela told her to just reveal. Roni's last question to Michelle was if he recollected how dirty she was when he found her behind a dumpster and smiled when he said that he did. He said he also recalled her telling him that she fended off a man who would just not give up trying to molest her. Roni told Michelle he was correct, but admitted to that explanation being a lie to save her skin from being punished for killing Robbie the Third's brother, Benny. That bashed him, Toddy, and Daniela harder than a bomb going off, halting the cool breeze right then and there. Michelle shook his head at Roni and asked her if she realized that she confessed to killing one of Bromelia's most beloved playboys. She knew exactly what she said, and in case he was wondering, she'd do it again with a tone as serious as the allegation she made up. Daniela had no idea Roni had it in her and congratulated her for liberating every female from that two-time nonce. Clenching her fists and teeth, Toddy lunged for the ladder with the eyes of death itself, but Michelle restrained her until her energy was emptied out. Roni said she killed Benny as punishment for a run-in they had when Gregorio was still in power, reminding Daniela of how her time in Walpolado concluded. Michelle was in disbelief over his closest friend's attempts to justify the homicide of a man whose disappearance was nearing its second anniversary. Toddy informed Roni that Benny was her godfather, but Daniela spat out a so what and said that blessed man was a yellow crosser who had his way with countless young red wasps. Michelle wished he knew more about what life was like during the Civil War, but was sure that keeping such a confession secret was out of the question. He understood that prison awaited him, Toddy, and Daniela if they upheld their promise, but his love for Roni and where they were stripped him of his inclination to tell. Also on Michelle's mind was the gang he killed in self-defense when his family vacationed in Isso di Pisci, Sardinia, Italy. This was beside his want to tell Roni, Toddy, and Daniela that Hiyomada orchestrated his grandparents' executions and made his father, aunts, and uncles watch. It was one of the first terrible acts that Alexis Jr. and his entourage committed after the attempted cleansing that involved Mara, Mauro Jr., Irianne, Donato, Cretan, and Javiera. An ecstatic, echoing horn and Hiyomada's announcement of the scavenger hunt being over stopped Michelle, Roni, Toddy, and Daniela from discussing the confession further. They emerged from the patch and saw how buddy-buddy the other groups had become and pleased Hiyomada was to witness what her first activity accomplished. Michelle didn't forget what Roni admitted but decided to deal with her later, for he had a more colorful and wicked target to lock on. Toddy wanted to rip his friend to shreds for killing Benny and would be darned if she let the justice system nurture her. Daniela nudged Roni and whispered in her ear that any person with the guts to kill a fascist pervert was a friend of hers, hurting Michelle with the venom it spat on his face. Roralda sensed what they were feeling, and it wasn't good, concerned her dearly, and made her fear that the day at Smileydom was about to take another bad turn. And as fate would have it, Hiyomada's next activity would dispel and confirm her fears and bring certain things closer to the funfair and drop a few right at its doorstep. And that was a school on a hunt. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the story I just gave. Share this show with everyone you know. Make sure they share it with everyone they know. Check out my website at www.rss.com/podcasts/The Dystopian Republic. Send me your respectful questions and constructive feedback at RaulGuerreroJr95@gmail.com. On that note, I'm Raul Guerrero, and come again for another gripping, thoughtful, and sinister episode of The Dystopian Republic.